Blog Talk Radio.
You think the people of this country exist to provide you with position. I think your position exists to provide those people with freedom.
All right, everybody. It's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. I am your host, Ron Golden, right here live from beautiful Georgia. And this show, of course, is brought to you by PatriotFamilies.com. That is PatriotFamilies with a YS.com. So as promised, I told you guys in the chat earlier that I'm going to be asking you a question tonight. And I don't want you to Google it. I don't want you to search it out. I want your answer from your best understanding of what this means to you. Sovereignty or sovereign, both on the individual level and as a collective, a national level, if you will. What does it mean? What does it mean to be a sovereign? What is sovereignty? And the concept of sovereignty and how it's changed over the years. You know, some time ago, I posted a blog on Patriot Families about Rousseau's idea of sovereignty, the collective, if you will. But there's also recognized a sovereignty on an individual level, such as a monarch, a king, if you will. And what do you suppose the founders had in mind when discussing the sovereignty of the United States, the sovereignty of a state, and the creation of a central government, a federal government? Because that really is kind of right at the heart of the matter, is it not, as to what all this was supposed to mean and how it kind of got off the rails, or did it get off the rails? Is what we're seeing today just a natural consequence of the sovereignty as accepted by one ideology or another? Free from outside control. Well, you know, not really, because there are outside forces that can force a sovereign king or a sovereign nation, obviously, to capitulate, to concede, if you will. But honestly, the sovereignty, from the liberal viewpoint, sovereignty is the ability to make and enforce laws. But I think that's, in a collective sense, today. Back in the day, prior to the Enlightenment, that was an individual, the divine right of the king, the right to make laws and enforce them. But there was a caveat, and that was to make laws and enforce them for the greater good. Sound familiar? For the benefit of the collective. So this idea of sovereignty, while it sounds like it is something new, a new concept, it really isn't. And those of you that read the blog post I put up with the ideology from Rousseau, who took much of his theory from Hobbes, and of course, they both drew heavily on Socrates and others. This is philosophy. And it is the idea of sovereignty. And I'll read you a little bit of Hobbes in The Leviathan, which, of course, he drew heavily on someone else's work, The Leviathan, written in 1651. In that book was the creation of the first version of the social contract, or the contractarian theory, arguing that to overcome the nasty, brutish, and short quality of life without cooperation of other human beings, people must join in a commonwealth and submit to a sovereign power that is able to compel them to act in the common good. This expediency argument attracted many of the early proponents of sovereignty. Hobbes strengthened the definition of sovereignty beyond by saying that it must be absolute, because conditions can only be imposed on a sovereign if there were some outside arbitrator to determine when he had violated them. Supreme Court come to mind. In which case the sovereign would not be the final authority. Again, Supreme Court, starting to get an idea of where that concept might come from. Indivisible, the sovereign is the only final authority in his territory. He does not share final authority with any other entity. Hobbes held this to be true because otherwise there would be no way of resolving a disagreement between multiple authorities. Now, there are ways, of course, of remedy at law between multiple sovereigns. No man is sovereign to the point that he is above the natural law. That's a pretty easy concept to adhere, to hang on to. You know, not even the king is exempt of the natural law. Murder. Crimes against person. But it is this idea that sovereignty serves only the purpose to serve the greater good, the collective, that I have an issue with. And this is certainly the ruse that's being shoved up our tailpipe over the last 100-plus years in this country. The collective, the greater good, the good and plenty clause, the general welfare. You see, we have twisted the concept of the founders into a general welfare, meaning a collective. The whole, you know, the collective. And that's not truly, I don't believe, what was intended by the founders when they spoke of the general welfare of the United States or of the Union. It was for the peaceful coexistence of the Union. When we hear Thomas Jefferson and his quote that the tree of liberty should be refreshed from time to time with the blood of tyrants and patriots alike, does anyone know what he wrote that in reference to? It was a specific event that occurred that caused him to write that very famous quote. Anyone out there have a guess as to what historical event in our very early history might have motivated Thomas Jefferson to write that quote? He wrote quite a bit more than just that single quote, but certainly the context of that quote, it was in response to a specific event that occurred during the presidency of George Washington. And the event was Shays' Rebellion. That's when Jefferson wrote that quote, that the tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of tyrants and patriots alike. He thought that it was a good thing this rebellion occurred, because it showed that the people were keen to hold the government accountable for its actions, even to the point of taking up arms against it when the people saw that the government, in their eyes, had overstepped its authority. The Thomas Jefferson quote, that the tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of tyrants and patriots alike. FT, that's the quote we're talking about. And that was in direct response to Shays' rebellion. Jefferson thought it was much better that the people would rise up with arms when they thought that the government was transgressing on that precious jewel, their liberty. And that, you know, we haven't had that kind of spirit in this country in a very, very long time. And of course, today, they would all be labeled terrorists and be renditioned to Guantanamo Bay. And we would probably get a news report that some militia group had created a stir, but the terrorist plot was foiled by the FBI or some such thing. But truly, the idea of sovereignty, as I understand the meaning from the mind of the framers, was taking it a step further than just a mere collective. It was the idea, as expressed in the Declaration of Independence, that the rights of every individual were unalienable. That the individual possessed rights which were in and of themselves sovereign to each individual, making each individual a sovereign in and of himself. Not that that sovereign individual could write laws and enforce them upon his neighbor, but that it was a mutually beneficial sovereignty that was shared by all, and it was not able to be transgressed without punishment under the natural law that was so natural it was self-evident. That's really the point, is it not? Self-evident sovereignty. Hobbes, Rousseau, and all these others, they ramble on, but they wax poetic about socialism, for lack of a better term. When we read in Rousseau, dealing with sovereignty and its rights, sovereignty, or the general will, is inalienable, for the will cannot be transmitted. It is indivisible, since it is essentially general. It is infallible and always right, determined and limited in its power by the common interest. It acts through laws. Law is the decision of the general will in regard to some object of common interest, but through the general will is always right and desires only good. Its judgment is not always enlightened, and consequently does not always see wherein the common good lies. Hence the necessity of the legislator. But the legislator has of himself no authority. He is only a guide who drafts and possesses or proposes laws. But the people alone, that is, the sovereign or general will, has the authority to make and impose them. Well, we see this clouding of the idea of government with the individual, and the government becomes the collective, or the collective will, for the greater good. Nothing in here speaks of the safeguarding of the individual. If it is determined that all females should be held in bondage, and the majority of the collective is male, well, then the minority of females being held in bondage have no vote in the matter. They have no say in the matter. They are not within themselves sovereign, and therefore, it's for the greater good. Because, of course, the male portion of the population is greater than the female in that instance. So it's really easy to see how that gets out of hand pretty quickly. That is not sovereignty. That is, as you all are fully aware, a pure majority, a pure democracy, which is, of course, not what the founders had envisioned, nor is it the government that was created either under the states or in the federal government. To me, it seems that the founders recognized that the idea of a collective, if you will, even a representative collective that we would call government, the very idea that the representative collective had within its own creation the authority to do as it will, always with an eye towards the greater good, is ridiculous. The created can never become greater than the creator. And that's why I believe in the Declaration, Jefferson penned those words, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal with certain unalienable rights, and that governments derive their just authority from the consent of the governed. It is us, collectively and individually, that give authority to government, that give it arms, legs, and an ability to act upon individuals. When government strays outside of the natural law, when trying to deal with an individual or a group of individuals, then I would suggest that that government is trying to impose unnatural laws upon a natural entity, a natural human being. Oh, most certainly they have, yo. So the question becomes, you know, for me, I think government has two different entities that it deals with, or three, technically. You have human beings, individual, flesh and blood human beings. Then you have artificial persons, that is, businesses, corporations, where government seeks to regulate their behavior to make sure that everybody is on an equal playing field. And then you have nation states or other countries, and that is another sovereignty to deal with. But I think we really overstep our bounds as individuals and as collectives, as governments, when we try to impose some artificial law on the actions of our neighbors. And it's done so not out of safeguarding our neighbors' rights and their liberties, but it's done so to restrict our neighbor's rights and liberties. That's where the problem lies, wholeheartedly. It is a mechanism to control the greatest number of the collective through arbitrary rules, regulations, and laws, if we will. That is the fundamental problem. And the reason the founders wrote the Constitution, the framers, if you will, in that instance, the reason that they debated and it went on and on is that they did not want to establish a system of control. The purpose, the stated purpose, if we go back to that preamble of our Constitution, we remember, right, you know, to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, and provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. See, it's okay. We wanted to perfect the union. And the union, the purposes of the union, were to regulate trade between the states and with foreign entities, you know, international law or rules, if you will. Make sure that everything here at home was cool and we weren't being attacked either by other states or by nations outside of the collective union of states. And to that end, to make sure that everybody was pitching in their fair share towards the defense of the area, the geographic landmass, to promote the general welfare. To promote the general welfare. What does that mean exactly? What do you think, guys? What do you think promoting the general welfare means? Does that mean that we provide everyone, you know, a chicken in every pot and coal in every stove? Is that the idea, the general welfare? Make sure no child's left behind kind of thing? Because I really don't see it that way. Maybe I'm just naive. And secure the blessings of liberty. Now, what were those blessings? What are the blessings of liberty that are bestowed upon each individual? Where would we find those if we were not to look back into our Declaration of Independence that is recognizing that individuals have rights, and those rights are not subject to the whim of the majority or a minority or a collective or a government or even a king? Can we visualize, conceptualize here, a government that is more totalitarian than a monarchy, a king? I certainly don't see one. But this is why, in the past, and I will continue until the day that I die, I have expressed that the Declaration of Independence, while many say it is not law, and that's true in the sense of the legalistic term of law, it is more important than that. It is the foundational cornerstone upon which our law finds its anchor, its resting place. It is the stability for all laws that are passed under our representative constitutional form of government. Without the declaration espousing the liberty inherent in each individual, the sovereignty that we are left with is the sovereignty of Rousseau and Hobbes, the collective. How often have we said we don't want to be more like Europe? Europe is socialist light. They have a representative democracy. Well, you know, we have the People's Republic of China. And I would posit to you that today there is more freedom found in China than in many places in Europe, and perhaps even right here at home. Now, I wouldn't say at every level. That would be a foolish statement. But I think in some instances, there is much more leeway and liberty, if you will. I don't want to move out of the United States, and I don't want to lose the country that I think we could be. But the current direction that this country is traveling in just harkens right back to Hobbes, Rousseau, Hegel, Socrates, Plato's Republic. I mean, it is the same fundamental philosophy, the collective. And that should be distressing, as I know it is for most all of you. All of you listening, my general routine listeners. I suppose one of the questions should be, what are we doing about it? What can we do about it? Is there anything we can do about it? Can we stem the tide? Do you think that we can change enough hearts and minds? I don't see it. From where I sit, I think this disastrous nanny state that has been erected over the decades will have to at once fail, and fail miserably to the point that it collapses down around the very ears of its progenitors, the people that uphold and uplift this government and all of the programs and just hold hands and sing kumbaya about how we all these things are so wonderful. It's going to have to collapse down around them, and the pressure and the weight of the utter and total failure of this ideology is going to have to crash down on their heads before they begin to realize and understand. You cannot, ladies and gentlemen, build a just and moral society on the concept of forceful capitulation. There is no such thing as forced consent. Consent is freely given, just as charity is freely given. Consent that is forced is no consent at all. It is an acquiescence, not a consent. There is a difference. It's sad that so many in our society today cannot make that connection. And we're going to pick up a caller. Who we have here?
Hey, how you doing, man?
There's a difference.
Hey, hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I just wanted to tell you, man, I really agree with what you're saying, you know what I'm saying? Like, it really is sad, like, the Constitution was built for a reason, and it just doesn't seem like we literally follow it. It's like we without knowing, we actually, like, bend, you know, certain things, you know, to fit the mold, you know, of what's going on in everyday world. I mean, I understand life is about, you know, changing and growing, but, like, certain things you know, the structure of our country, and certain things you shouldn't bend on, you know. And I don't know, it just baffles me how Americans today have just, you know, become just so complacent and just okay with everything, you know.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it, we look at words, and even legal terms anymore. Where right now there's a case in front of the Supreme Court where we're redefining words and legal terms, the recess appointments that they're talking about. When we just change the meaning of terms as we feel the need, then words really don't have meaning. They're subjective. It's, you know, it depends on the whim of whoever is uttering the word, what it means. And that's one of many problems we've had. But, I mean, we find reason and ways to rationalize away common sense. What ought to be just common sense, we find ways to rationalize that away. The whole argument over homosexual unions or whatever. I don't wish any ill will towards anyone. I don't care what their sexual orientation is. But if we're going to redefine the term marriage to accommodate a small percentage of our society, then the word marriage really loses all value and meaning.
Value, exactly. All value.
We could very easily do what many of the other countries around the world have done and pass a piece of legislation that recognizes same-sex civil unions as equal to traditional marriage for the purpose of federal benefits. It's really that easy. And that should end the argument. But I think it would not end the argument, because I think that there is a faction within the homosexual community that are fanatical, and that's not really what they're pushing for, I don't think. I could be wrong.
How do you feel about homosexuals and joining like the military?
Look, I don't think, well, there, you name me a time when there haven't been homosexuals in our military. I mean, it's never happened.
Yeah.
And pretending that doesn't exist doesn't make it go away.
Exactly.
I think that in the military, there is a specific code of conduct, and that is non-negotiable. The last thing that you want as a commander, a military commander in the military, and especially during times of war, is to have a bunch of soldiers, you know, worrying about their boyfriends and worrying about sex rather than the task at hand. So it can be a distraction. But I think what we had in the military worked reasonably well. As a general rule, I don't think that the military should promote homosexuality. It should be frowned upon, and don't ask, don't tell. Okay, as long as you're, as long as it's not blatantly out in the open, then, you know, I'm okay. I'm not okay with the act. I find it personally reprehensible, but I'm not the guy involved in it. So, you know, it's really not my worry.
Okay, well, that's all I just wanted. I just wanted to know how you felt about that, man. I appreciate you, you know, picking up the call.
No worries, man. Thanks for calling in.
No problem.
All right, and we've got, looks like maybe Robert. Is that you, Robert?
Mr. Ron, yes it is. How you do?
Man, are you hiding in a closet or what?
I've just been slammed. The season is here. You know how it goes here down in Florida.
Boy, I can just barely hear you, Mr. Robert.
Let me get out of this. For some reason, my cell phone doesn't pick up in my office. For some reason, I don't know why. Can you hear me now?
A little bit better. I don't think anybody in the audience can hear you.
Oh, let me try it outside. Maybe it'll pick up better outside. Because I don't use my home phone anymore. I'm ready to can it so I can get... I don't even know why I have a home phone anymore. Can you hear me better now?
It's about the same. You're just going to have to talk really loud.
All right. How about now?
That's a little better. So what's on your mind?
I don't know, Ron. I'm just trying to figure all this stuff out and see what's going to pan out. Have no clue.
I don't think any of us do, you know? It's kind of a crazy time.
And it's just like we're limbo. I'm just in limbo right now.
Limbo?
I feel like I'm in purgatory.
Well, you know, I think there's a lot of folks that feel that way. I would say it's more of a general malaise that feels like has come over the country. And, you know, the fanatics never seem to let up.
No.
I really think that...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I really think that the vast majority of people, no matter what side of the political ideology they come down on, or, you know, homosexual or not, black, white, blue, purple, green, I think the vast majority of folks are whistling past the graveyard. I just think that everybody is kind of wanting to believe that things are getting better, but they're really not seeing much to reinforce that in their day-to-day lives.
You know, Ron, it's just, you know, I was at Home Depot, you know, I had a lot of things been happening in my kitchen, you know, my refrigerator's almost on the brink, my oven's on the brink, you know, and God only knows how old these ovens and refrigerators are before I moved in. It's just like...
Wow. Sorry, I won't make a joke.
But people's behaviors are just getting way, I mean, just driving is dangerous these days. It's just, you know, people are just driving crazy. Everybody goes to the store is crazy. I mean, it's just, their behavior is just obnoxious. It's just unbelievable. I mean, I'm seeing it get worse every day.
Well, it just seems to me that everyone, I mean, almost every segment of our society feels threatened.
Well, I know I do.
It's just, I think, a consequence of the division that is being stirred up. Some of it intentionally, some of it, I think, unintentionally, and you know, everybody, I think the vast majority, as I said, I think they're really looking for something to hold on to as a positive, and we're not really finding it.
Well, you know, I had health insurance. I had health insurance, you know, but I tell you what, I thought I was bulletproof. Now I'm not bulletproof. I ain't bulletproof anymore. That's what really bothers me, Ron. I'm not bulletproof anymore. I mean, it just bothers me that, God forbid, it's like doctors did surgery without waiting for the insurance, whether or not they're going to get paid or not. They did it anyways, you know? And that's what's going to happen. It's going to just debacle to know it.
I think you're hitting it on the head, and I think for a lot of people, exactly what you're expressing, and it can be summed up in a single word, uncertainty.
Damn believable, excuse me.
And I think it's the first time, in a very, very long time in the United States of America where the vast majority of the public is uncertain. We're uncertain about what our future is tomorrow. And it's not just, you know, the ACA. It's not just Obamacare. It's a whole litany of things, one piled on top of another. And it's not just this administration. We already know that. We all agree on that. We saw the, I mean, we've seen this building to a crescendo for decades. And only now are we looking at a lot of this in hindsight. You know? Yeah, and it's like I said the other night, I was coming home, and I try not to because I really don't care for Hannity and that group. But there's not much to listen to on the radio on my way home, and I've got Sirius Satellite. And I heard Hannity and some other goomba he had in there. And my God, it was like a role reversal. You had the he was grilling one of the girls, I think it was Kirsten Powers, who's an attorney, grilling her on marijuana, smoking pot. And right. I'll say first and foremost as a disclaimer, I don't smoke it anymore. I did when I was a kid. You know, it's just I don't have a dog in this fight, so to speak. I'm not, you know, rah-rah, let's all go get high. But, my God, here's Hannity and this other dipstick that he had in there, and they sounded like a couple of liberal Democrats trying to force the greater good collective ideology on this girl because she thought that it was great that Colorado passed these laws.
Now,
and they're
that,
trying
that
to make...
But that was on my mind too, Ron. I mean, it just
what,
seems
going
like...
to Colorado?
Well, no. It just it seems like we're trying to decipher who are the Republican rhinos or the Republican progressives who have the same ideology as Biden and Obama. And the thing is, you don't know who to trust, though. You can't decipher. I mean, it's just like...
I've said it before, Robert. I know who to trust. I don't even trust myself because I know that I'm subject to human nature. And as much as I like to be... Well, I'm absolutely being honest because I know that I'm a hothead and I can get ticked off and do and say things that... aren't right. And we have to be able to, you know, examine ourselves in that way. But I truly don't trust anyone, and I think the founders were correct that we should guard jealously our liberty and strike out at anyone who would approach that jewel, anyone that wants to restrict my liberties, my rights. You know, I got an issue with that. Now, we're not talking about doing things that encroach on someone else and their liberty. That's not what I'm talking about. And I believe we've got Miss Linda on the line. What's up, Miss Linda? How are you?
Fine. How is everybody? Hi, Robert. Hello, everyone in the chat room. You know, it's funny when you were talking about sovereignty, and, you know, there's probably about three or four different points in a dictionary explaining it because there'll be individual, there'll be, like, the sovereignty of a state or a country is what that means. You know, that's kind of fun to go through and check the words and the language. But when I said free from outside control, I didn't mean free from God's control because he's still in charge, and that's kind of where I was coming from. What I meant was other humans trying to force tyranny or oppression upon us, whether you're a state or a city or a person. I don't know if that makes sense, but
oh, certainly. You know, I think that was really the jewel that the very gist of what Jefferson was driving home in the Declaration, and I think it's unfortunate that at that very same time. There was human beings being held in bondage, in ownership, seen as property to others. And I know that many of the founders struggled with that hypocrisy.
Yes.
But they also recognized that, you know, this was the best solution that they could
come up with at the time.
Provide at the time without causing an internal war, which we ended up causing anyway. And for you and I'm you know, regardless of all the crap that gets thrown around, you and I'm certain, cannot fathom owning another human being as property. We just, there's nothing within us that sees that as
normal.
Any kind of normal,
yeah.
Anything that falls anywhere close to being natural liberty, natural order of things, it's unconscionable.
It's abhorrent to us.
Absolutely. Yeah. And would never be put forth as an idea that would be acceptable.
Right.
That's just...
You know, and then, you know, Robert's kind of confused and he's worried about the ACA. Well, and you mentioned that this is just the tip of the iceberg. This has been coming at us for decades, and the New Deal, the Schmo Deal, you know what I mean? The social insurance, the United Nations, every damn thing they've thrown at us, from HMOs to Medicare. It's sick. I mean, and it's culminated, and it is a problem. And you're right about when you were going back to the Declaration and talking about the preamble, because when you say to promote the general welfare, that would mean to me in their minds, because they're in a time when language meant something, you know, it was clear, to protect ourselves from outside evil. You know what I'm saying? From pirates or whatever. And they weren't talking about welfare as, you know, have six more kids and we'll give you more money. That is not what they're talking about.
Right. And so, also in that term, you know, a more perfect union, meaning a more harmonious relationship between the states, creating a central government that has the ability to act upon the states to bring everyone into consensus, if you will. And it was a way for everybody to counterbalance one another, always with the idea of keeping in mind some of those principles that are outlined by Hobbes and others, but also keeping in mind that one fundamental line in the Declaration. And that's why Jefferson, at the Shays Rebellion, penned the letter that he did, talking about the Tree of Liberty needing to be refreshed from time to time with the blood of tyrants and patriots alike. You know, the people reserved in themselves the right to rise up against government when it overstepped its bounds. And that was the ultimate way of resolving that conflict, and clearly it was not an order of the judicial branch deeming that the tax on whiskey was constitutional. That had no bearing on it, none at all.
Right, Ben, Ron, you know what I heard today, what I heard this weekend.
What's that, Mr. Robert?
Very reliable source. And it just really bothered me to no end. The reason why 50,000, almost 6 million people got canceled from their individual health care plans is because that their salaries, the income that they made, could not afford, overmet their premiums. You get what I'm saying? Overmet their premiums. Their income didn't match their premium status. How about that?
Well, that certainly that could certainly be a possibility. You know, and I think
in other words, they were trying to say that in a nice way, you're broke and you really can't afford your plan.
Well. one of the things that the ACA has done to bring more division is put a very large group of folks into what can only be seen as a welfare role. And more we're being divided between the haves and the folks that work to pay for it. Mm-hmm. We're really, it's very, it's distressing to see that, you know, every working American that gets up and goes to work every day, if you earn more than, you know, the $50,000 a year, I believe it is for an individual, you're carrying the burden for your neighbor and yourself and your family, if you have family. And it's becoming more of a burden than most folks can bear.
Oh, man.
It's leading to a sense of despair, I think, in a lot of circles where we were formerly, you know, very content, middle-class families are now becoming very uncertain about what tomorrow is going to bring. And, of course, the economy is suffering on top of it. We've got over 90 million people out of work in this country.
Yep.
Why do you think that, people are pushing for a minimum wage of $15 an hour? Because the reality is that's a living wage.
It is. It is a living
wage. Given all the burdens that are placed upon the average working American. I mean, this is not some racial division or, you know, rich man, poor man kind of scenario. This is the average day, everyday, run-of-the-mill, you know, average Americans. And it's really creating a sense of uncertainty that is palpable in our society. Mm-hmm. And when we look at the government, you know, we see the growing debt. We see all these things going on. We see the bailouts and the bail-ins where we're taking money mm-hmm. from the productive segment of our society and we're putting it into, for at this point, what is a non-productive. The only thing the Wall Street class and the banking class is producing is more wealth for themselves and their investors and nothing for the average American and for the overall general economy or what I would call the general welfare of the United States. And then we hear the president and our Congress coming out and espousing that we're going to focus on jobs. Well, that's not the role of government. We should not be relying upon government to create jobs. In a really solid economy, one that operates on the principles of a free market,
mm-hmm.
okay, it is the economy that creates jobs. It is the people.
The marketplace, yeah.
The marketplace that creates jobs and opportunities. But we have so damaged that concept with government control and regulation and, you know, there is
central
not...
Central planning, Keynesian, yeah.
There is not a single founding father or framer that mm-hmm. is blameless in this. Even Jefferson went out on mm-hmm. a limb with the Louisiana Purchase, had tariffs in place. I mean, none of these guys were perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And, you know, we can argue expediency, and I think each individual one would have to be looked at in its own
right.
time frame. But we've gotten so far away from the very concepts. You know,
well,
to me...
Especially of what real capitalism was. Or
well, precisely.
The theory of... I'm hearing this nonsense from, you know, Ovamit and I think even Rubio. I don't know what his... I didn't get to read the whole article, but I was, of course, hearing the same Keynesian Marxist nonsense from blah, blah, blah about promise zones. And also there was another one. Of course, John Boehner was espousing the same nonsense. And everybody's of the ilk that the government creates the jobs and that not everybody has an equal opportunity for success in this country. Well, they would have if you'd get the hell out of their way. I mean, that's just, you know, for open.
Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, it's discussed every day, and that is the number of jobs leaving the United States, okay? And the main factor, or one of the main factors, is cost of production, labor cost in particular. If we take a really honest look at that, and let's go back for a moment to the tariffs, the
right.
earliest tariffs in the United States, some under, was it Madison, that really caused a big stir after the War of 1812. It's protectionism.
Okay.
It is protectionism. If you truly believe in a free market, okay, then you're going to tell me that your competition, in that case England, is able to produce goods of higher quality and at a lower cost, ship them halfway around the world to the Americas and sell them at a profit, and you can't produce those goods at home in a competitive manner, and it's their fault. It's not your fault. Well, that's just not right. Okay?
Right.
And in the same token, instead of looking at why is it that China can produce these goods so much more cheaply than the United States, and why is it also that Americans would rather buy an inferior product at a cheaper price than they would a better product, a superior product at a higher price? Now, we can say, well, China has slave labor and they're, you know, how much they're paying their people and all of this. But here's
part of the reason
thing.
I mean, for the American people, let's say, why would they be willing to pay a cheaper price for inferior goods? Because some people cannot afford the other, which is, I get where you're going. Because
exactly.
Everything's a mess. Yeah.
There's a term for that, rising prices, and that is
inflation.
Right. And what is the primary cause of rising prices? The diminishing value of your currency.
Of the dollar, right.
How do we diminish the value of your currency? You create
right.
more
Come
of
on.
It.
Right. Okay.
So you see, it's your prosperity is your own worst enemy in
Got
a
it.
Centrally planned system
right.
where you create currency instead of relying upon money.
Oh.
Now, you know, some of the arguments are, well, gee, if you were just on a gold system, then the banks or China or whoever, they'd just hoard all the gold. Well, if everyone was on a gold and silver standard and one entity, we'll say China, they're doing a bunch of trade and they just hoard all the gold. Once they have it all, then what? What happens to their
sense.
Economy
That's
once golden. They have it all? They their economy is done because there's no money in circulation.
Right. It's not, it's not.
Their trade begins to diminish, taper off, which is exactly what we're seeing happening, ladies and gentlemen, with the United States, is that our trade is beginning to taper off. Our own economy here at home, just locally in the geographical area of the United States, is diminishing. Prices are increasing. The burden on everyone is increasing to the point that it's unsustainable. This is what I've been talking about from the get-go.
I know.
It's the economy, and unless we pay attention to how
Do
these
it.
Things happen, why they happen, we're not going to ever come to a solution.
No.
And I believe I have my good friend, Mr. Mikey B.
Mikey
from the hot seat
on the line.
Indeed, you do.
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good on this manic Monday. How you doing?
Oh, man, I'm still upright and breathing for the moment.
Yes. Yeah, well, that's always a good thing. Well, I'd like to recap a little bit.
Certainly.
So far. Number one, not only the country doesn't have any sovereignty, well, they gave that away because we know who's really running it. Secondly, we don't have sovereignty thanks to the 14th Amendment. We are just a piece of corporate chattel. We don't even count. We're just scum to these people. See, and that's what people have to understand. Is that when you think you're just a name, you're just a number, you are. You are just that. We are just that. We are just corporate pieces of crap. And now it's to the point where they don't want to play with us anymore. You see, they gave us a taste. 40s, 50s, 60s. That taste is all gone now. They want everything back. And they want you to have nothing. So you better home in on that. That you're not even a person. So before you think about anything else, you need to become a person. Now, as far as gays in the military, well, that's really working out well, isn't it? This, you know, we're going down the road, folks, of the ancient Israelites, ancient Greeks, and the ancient Romans. Where are they now? Okay? Now, you have Eric Holder has now overridden Utah's same-sex marriage ban or, you know, hold on it. Nope, it's federally recognized. So there you go. And now you have Arizona once again being a punching bag. The Supreme Court has overturned their 20-week ban on abortions. Because, you know, the fetus isn't able to live outside the womb for 24 weeks. Let's forget about the fact that it's a baby from conception. Let's even not put that. Let's forget about the fact that in the womb, it has a head, it has a heart, has a brain, two arms, and two legs. Oh, but it's not a person. So we can just kill it. So, where do you think we're going to go? Where do you think we're going to be? We're going to be in the same boat as those ancient civilizations because we just have to go down the road to debauchery. So, all of this is going to end very badly if we don't start working from house to house and teaching our children the Judeo-Christian values and the constitutional values that were set before us. So my only advice is we know to prepare with real money and learning how to make food for ourselves, which I will do in time, and just toast marshmallows, folks, when it all goes down the crapper, because it has to. It has to. And the current currency system is also proof in the pudding. Like you said, Ron, there's no way the debt can be reduced. Every dollar that's made through our fake phony incomes, which is not really
income. It's mathematically impossible.
But they have to produce another dollar for that dollar. For every dollar you take out of the bank has to produce another dollar from the Fed to make up that dollar. I mean, it's just, it's over.
Pretty
well. That's, you know, and I wish I could, and I may go looking for it this evening when we're done here. I wish I could remember the YouTube video that really laid out the economic scenario, if you will. And it was about three guys that were stranded on an island. And they didn't have any money. And so it created an argument because there was no way for them to effectively barter back and forth. I mean, it just got really ugly pretty quick. And then suddenly they see a guy in a rowboat rowing ashore. And wouldn't you know it, of all the luck, he's a banker. And he's managed to salvage in his boat his vault, a big safe. And they help him unload the safe and drag it up onto the shore. And he tells them, oh, man, it's a good thing I came along when I did. Because I've got exactly what you guys need. You need money. You need a way to trade amongst yourselves. You need money. And I just happen to have a printing press. And I can print the money for you. And they said, well, what good is that going to do? How are we going to back up this money? He said, don't worry. The safe is full of gold. So it's all good. So the money is 100% gold-backed. You got nothing to worry about. So he prints up money, and he loans it to each of them. And they put up as collateral their huts that they've built and their gardens that they've created. And he loans them all money. And so they're trading back and forth amongst each other with the money, and everything is great. But this little problem starts to arise as they're paying their payments on the loans. It becomes apparent to two of them pretty quickly that they don't have enough money to pay back their loan, because the one guy has got the majority of the money now from all their trade. And they're going to default on their loans, and then the banker's going to own their hut and their garden and everything they've worked so hard for. And he says, oh, don't worry. You just need a little more money. I can give you another loan. And he's giving them another loan. And, you know, pretty soon they, after a while, this goes on, and they all start to conspire and realize this banker's an SOB, and there's no way any of them can repay the loans because they all owe all this interest, and there's only a set amount of money in circulation, see. And so they attack the banker, and when they force him to open the safe, it's full of coconuts. See, there was never any gold. Well, but as long as they thought there was some in there, they thought it was a good system. But it didn't take them long to realize that they were getting hosed, and he was getting all the money, and he was going to own all their property, and they'd be left with nothing.
And, well, that's all the Federal Reserve has. Well, they've got his coconuts in their vault.
Exactly.
They've got the same thing.
They have coconuts, all they need is a checkbook.
Yeah, and it would be nice if the banks were loaning money. They've shut us out. So, like, we couldn't even get a loan really an arduous affair, even if we wanted to, which I'm certainly smart enough at this point. Linda and I have discussed. We don't even want your damn loans, banks. We don't want anything from you. You can go to hell. Now,
yeah, I don't care about the credit rating. I don't give a crap about any of that. Because I know what it is. It's just a trap.
Yeah,
it's a trap, and
Ron, talking about, you know, the banks taking the property, you know, major cities all over this country are now using eminent domain. Thank you, brain work sometimes.
Yes.
Eminent domain to take back foreclosures, and it's happening from coast to coast. So years to come, as they increasingly take back the land, they're going to be the only landlord in town. The way it's going.
Well, until the collapse, they're going to own all
the property.
Who holds the mortgage to a lot of that property but Uncle Sam, Fannie and Freddie?
Well, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Now, so, I want to switch gears. Go ahead, Linda.
Oh, I was just going to say that all three of us have decided we're kind of unplugging from that matrix. And as far as when they constantly try to give me credit cards, they want me to sign up for a credit card. And so I just take the thing, and they have the return envelope, and it's got the pre-postage paid. I just tear it all up, put it back in, and send it back to them every single time because I don't want it. I'm paying. They'll get tired after a while.
Well, I want to shift gears a little bit, if only for a moment, and talk about the latest goings-on with the Bundesbank over in Germany. So I want to read you a little article that I got from the Harvey Organ's Daily Gold and Silver Report.
Okay.
We had several news items last week that boggle the mind. The most astonishing was the Bundesbank doing a 180-degree U-turn and saying that the gold that was delivered to them last year was not refined in the U.S. It was done in Germany after the arrival. This, of course, raises many more questions than already existed. Originally, when it was told that the U.S. refined the gold, the simple question of why was out there. Why did they do this? This was passed off by Germany by explaining that these bars needed to be LGD, London Good Delivery 400-ounce bars. This really did not pass the smell test, but it was what it was. Questions arose that maybe this gold was coin melt, and commentators speculated that Germany needed to take the heat off the Fed by making their refined in the U.S. statement. This now is apparently not the truth, as Germany now says that they refined the gold. But now there are more questions. Where in Germany was it refined? Could we maybe see some sort of chain of custody or bill of lading showing the movement of the gold? Why hasn't anyone come forward to clear this up? Someone surely at the refinery or a part of the transport plans could step up and swear to God that they touched the gold, handled the gold, or even saw the gold. But no, so far, no one knows nothing. As explained in the article last week, Monkey Business, gold has a fingerprint if it is not 99.999% pure. Based on purity and what other elements are mixed in, its origin or previous ownership can be narrowed down quite precisely. This is the problem that Germany is attempting to avoid for the Fed by making and then reversing their statements. Obviously, by reversing their statement, credibility now comes into question because the gold was either refined in the U.S. or in Germany, but it can't be both. And in reality, if it was the same original gold, it shouldn't be either one. Gee, sounds familiar. I mean, truly, if this was Germany's gold that they left for safekeeping at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, then there should be no reason to recast it, refine it, redo anything with it. Germany just takes back possession of what's rightfully theirs that was on deposit. This whole argument that it needed to be 400-ounce London Good Delivery bars is a crock of bull, which is why that story didn't wash and why it didn't pass the smell test. So by reversing their statement, they announced to the world, we are liars. One of the two statements is a lie by common logic. Which one? Does it matter? They can't even fall back on the old it was a mistake line because we are not talking about whether this gold was in the front right pocket or left pocket. Think about the logistics that had to be undertaken. 37.5 tons, 75,000 pounds, $2 billion, the guards and armored trucks involved, the chain of custody. And yet we are told to believe that, oops, we made a mistake. It was refined 5,000 miles away in a different country, different continent, different time zone, in a different refinery. Really?
Oh my God.
Getting to the meat of the matter and forgetting that when you lie once, you'll need to lie bigger and then even bigger to cover the first lies. Why did this gold even need to be refined? Again, because it apparently had a bad fingerprint. Bad meaning it was not the original fingerprint, shape or size, that this German gold was originally delivered in. It's really quite simple. It's not the same gold that was originally delivered, and you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to come to this conclusion. So what's the big deal? They got this gold back, right? Well, us conspiracy nuts were screaming a year ago when the deliveries were originally announced that there was no way it could take 8 years to get 20% of their gold back if it was really there and held in the Fed's vault. Right now, it's looking pretty good for the conspiracy nuts. In a nutshell, Germany's gold is obviously not there anymore. Something has happened to it. Was it leased out? Was it sold? Melted down and given away as Valentine's gifts? Who knows? It really doesn't matter. The only thing that absolutely, positively does matter is that the New York Fed did something it wasn't supposed to do with gold that didn't belong to it. The wealth of another sovereign nation that they were entrusted to the safekeeping of, period. End of story. Of course, there are a few other nagging questions, like, this was only 37.5 tons. What about the other 262.5 tons that are supposed to be shipped? Oh, yes, I know. The real wackos might even ask, what about the other 1,462.5 tons that are supposedly held in safekeeping? Did Cupid get a hold of any or all of this gold on a giving spree? I have to ask why the Germans are blowing their credibility to cover for something that they didn't do. Is it their gold after all? They didn't do anything wrong except deposit the gold in the first place and now making false statements. As with pretty much any of and all lies, this one will come to a head. 2014 will be all about deliveries or the lack of. It won't matter whether it's COMEX, the LBMA, GLD, or anywhere else. All failure can be hidden, or no, a failure can be hidden or swept under the rug depending on who it is that gets failed to deliver. The Germans are a prime example. The Chinese, however, are a different story, and most probably one that we will hear about very loudly.
Huh. Wow. That's just mind-boggling.
Well, I mean, you thank God, you know, Germany's an ally, and it is very blatantly obvious that they are playing CYA for the New York Fed.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It is enormous implications. It's enormous implications. And, you know, this is what I was speaking about a couple of weeks ago and last week on this German thing. And then, you know, I hear Glenn Beck comes out and was talking about it. I didn't hear what he had to say. But nonetheless, we hosed him.
Well, he was positing that, I don't know what, it was like a theory of his, that they, I mean, Germany's not the only ones who put gold in these vaults.
You got that right.
Japan, Italy, UK. So we're looking at multiple people. Now, Glenn thinks that our lovely little evil Fed has decided to rehypothecate this gold. You know what I mean? So that's just his theory. So that's what he was on about. And he also talked about the original stamp, you know, when you spoke about that in the article you just read where you identify.
They're stamped
it.
And numbered. They're marked. It's not like they're just indiscriminate lump of gold laying there going,
absolutely.
Wonder who this belongs to. It ain't happening, guys.
I know.
And see, that's the difference. We, as I said before, there's a couple of different standards. We use a 42-pound bar.
Okay.
London Good Delivery bars are 400 ounces. China wants metric measurements on their bars, and forgive me because I don't remember the exact weight measurement, but it's in, you know, it's a specific measurement.
Right.
The problem is a matter of trust. And
oh,
I wish I could remember the court ruling, and this goes back to the 1500 or 1600s in England. And it was a ruling by the English court, because up until the time that they had this common law ruling, banks were held specifically liable.
Wow.
Or any money, currency, whatever, depositors had on deposit with the bank. If you took 100 pounds to the bank and deposited it with the bank prior to this court ruling, even though the bank had physical custody of your 100 pounds, it did not belong to the bank and the bank could not do anything with it. And if it did and it lost that money, it had to compensate you. It had an obligation directly to you. After the ruling in London, they said that actually, and this is mind-blowing, that when you deposit money or currency with a bank, you have effectively abandoned your property.
Oh, my God.
And it now becomes property of the bank.
Can you repeat that one more time before you go on?
what the court ruled in London, and I'll have to go back and look it up. It's in the morass of papers that I possess. But the London Bank back in, I believe it was 1623, but I could be totally off. They ruled that when you put money or currency on deposit with a bank, legally, the effect was you were abandoning your property.
How did they derive at that?
Because you were relinquishing custodial control of the property. It's the old saying, possession is 9/10 of the law.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
Because you don't possess it, and you have left it in the custodial care of someone else, you have, in essence, abandoned your property. And the bank, therefore, owes you nothing.
And
should
that's
they
the way
lose
it's
going
to play out, too.
Exactly. And so this, it was a landmark decision, and it completely changed the face of banking from that moment moving forward.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you, you know, with the Germany thing and all, there are only so many fingers you could stick in a leaking dike, you know? I mean,
wow. Boy, I mean, I'm going to leave that alone and just let it go right on by.
Well, that's
yes,
I believe that's D-Y-K-E, maybe. I don't know. but there's only so many fingers you could stick in there, so.
Does that apply to Ron, that apply to the banks in the United States too, or no?
Well, seeing as how the United States adopted the common law of England as our rule of law, and believe it or not, it is still on the books. And in fact, when you go in and look at the code, the assertion is that the code is simply the common law written down and categorized or codified, which is complete and utter horse crap, but nonetheless, that's the theory we operate on. So
let me recap to see if I have this understood. So each time I go to a bank and when I deposit money into my checking account, they can take my property away from me, period.
They do take your property. As a matter of fact, it's not your property. You have given it to the bank.
I have given it to the bank.
Yes. Now, they may have a
contract.
Now, they may have a contractual obligation with you via a receipt, okay? But once that deposit is in the hands of the teller, it's the property of the bank. It's not yours. Period.
Right, and they could loan it out and do anything they want.
They can do whatever they want.
They gamble. They could do anything they want with it. And you just have to pray. You just have to pray, Robert, that the day that you go to the bank, and every time you go to the bank, that the day will never come where you go to get some of your money out with your little piece of paper that you have to say, oops, sorry, don't have that.
Well, if you want it
tomorrow,
look,
I mean, that's it.
Look,
so the,
okay.
So the next time the next time I make a deposit, I can go up to the teller and say, you're not going to take my property away from me, are you?
No, you're going to give it to them willingly.
I'm going to give it. I'm just going to, so I can say, I'm just giving you my property willingly. I give you this deposit. Thank you.
Now, think about this. Why do you think, I mean, this was one of the motivating factors behind the concept of FDIC?
Well, that's the whole crux of the problem there is the FDIC, but go ahead.
Now, if you want to look at the realization of what I was just talking about, look at Cyprus.
Right.
Yes, they just went right in.
Right.
Yep, took it out.
And there was, and look, there were no qualms about taking what they see as their property. This is just like government, okay? It operates just like government. Government does not look at your paycheck as belonging to you. Government looks at your paycheck as belonging to them, And whatever you are allowed to keep is at the benevolence of your government.
However, they like to tax all of your wages 100% as income. On top
of certainly, that, and that's their prerogative because, quite honestly, Mike, the money doesn't belong to you. It's not even, you know, it's not yours. It's currency. And I've made the technical point previously, and I'll put it to you this way, okay? If we talk about the idea of profit and income, it's a really simple thing to say that the currency that you are utilizing to conduct your daily business does not belong to you. It belongs to the Federal Reserve Bank, the branch from which it was issued. And it says so right on the note. It is their property. And therefore, because you are allowed to operate utilizing the bank's property as a proxy for money,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be charged rent or a usury fee for using the bank's script as if it were money. So
of
therefore,
course, we have no choice.
Any of that, well, now you do have a choice. Any of that currency that you come into possession of does not belong to you. It belongs to the bank. And if you're utilizing it as a proxy for money, then 100% of it is income to you because you are given the privilege of using it in the stead of money as a facsimile, a replacement, a token, a legal tender for money.
Okay, so what is our alternative?
Gold and silver coinage. The U.S. Mint still mints them.
Yeah, that's great, but try getting an employer to give you that. I mean, you know, it's just... Okay,
well,
I want to be paid in paper.
My argument would not be getting the employer to do so. My argument is this. You take your fiat paper currency, you go down, and you exchange it for legal tender gold and silver coin.
Great.
Now
Now
we're talking about something that we were discussing the other night. Currency exchange rates.
Like Bitcoin. Got it.
Okay. So, no different than you were just paid in pesos and you went and exchanged them for dollars. We can go into 31 USC 5112 and figure out by law what the heck is a dollar? Well, there's two different forms that a dollar is authorized by Congress to this very day. One is a silver coin weighing one troy ounce of 0.999 fine silver. The other is a copper-clad coin with some Indian chick on it.
It would be Sacagawea, I believe.
Right. So... If you are
Indian chick, you're such a racist, Ron. You're such a.
If you're exchanging,
I used the word token before. You're such a racist.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
If you're exchanging your paper notes for actual dollars, then the exchange rate would be 20-1 at the current exchange rate. That means that for every dollar you've literally come into possession of, you had to exchange $20 notes. For $1. So your income should be measured by the exchange rate. I got 60 seconds, guys. Thanks
for
calling
in. We're going to have to go into overtime. Ron, I don't want to let you go. Can't we, those that are on the phone, can we do a little overtime?
I don't mind.
Okay, good. Only because, you see, again, though, but here it comes to, though. All right, my employer is going to EFT my money. Right, electronic transfer, because that's what they like to do.
Sure.
So then you're telling me then, am I to go to my bank, ask for a withdrawal of that fiat currency? I've got the paper in my hand. Then I go to what? Like a silver and gold dealer, and, well, actually it'd have to be a silver and copper dealer to get, because I got to get those coins somehow. Someone's got to have them. Right.
Well, there is a $50 gold coin.
Okay. Now
that would
I get
cost you about 1,600 and or well, 1,200 and some change, and right. then there's a premium on top of that. But. Right.
But so I get this coinage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how do I pay my rent, buy my food, get my gas with this coinage? I mean, where do I go from there?
Well, you don't have to get all of it in coinage. There's the exchange rate exists whether you are still operating in paper or not,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay. So, I mean, you know, if you're paying in pesos, you shouldn't be billed as if you're paying in dollars, correct?
Right.
Yeah, but I'm just still trying to follow the trail where, you know, I'm getting an electronic funds transfer in currency. How am I supposed to turn that in? You know, I could scare, I could buy the coinage. Then what am I doing at this exchange rate? How am I going to be able to pay my bills holding the coins in my hand?
This, well, you know, believe it or not, there is a thing called carrot bars.
But who's going to accept it?
Oh, no. You can get a Visa card or an ATM card that is expressed in carrot bars, and they'll do all the conversion for you. When you go to buy gas or groceries or pay
okay,
rent,
okay. So now we're talking. All right. So now we're talking. See, here's the thing, Ron. See, now you have to enlighten us on how to get this because I don't know. I don't know if Linda or Robert knows. I don't.
No.
So we would need help with this. See, this
well,
is where you know.
Look up carrot bars with a K. K A R A T.
A T.
Carrot bars, and I wish to goodness I could remember. The guy's name, there was a guy in Nevada that had a construction company. And he was getting damn tired of jumping through all the government hoops. So he sat down with his workers. I shall not call them employees. And he had an idea, and he discussed it with them, and they all agreed that was a great idea. So he began paying his workers in silver coin. And not just any silver round, but silver eagles, U.S. legal tender coin.
No, I respect that, and that's great. A small business owner will do that. But not everyone can work for this guy, you know.
Well, no, I understand that. But he did it for a reason, and it's great that there was a company, a payer, that would do that. And here's the thing. Let's say you make $650 a week working for this guy, 650 Federal Reserve notes a week. So when we divide that, what we find is that you're actually making $32.50 a week. So he pays you 32 silver eagles and 5 silver dimes. Now, he looks at his accountant and says, well, what is the reporting requirement on $32.50? Well, there isn't any. Way below the threshold. Well, how about Social Security tax? How much we got to yeah, again, none, zero. It doesn't rise to the level of where we would need to deduct anything. Now, he's using U.S. legal tender coinage.
Brilliant. I love it.
Okay. So now the government, the IRS, comes in and seizes his business, subpoenas him and all 160 of his workers, and they end up in court. He won.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
His lawyer.
Exchange rate. Yeah.
Exactly. His lawyer puts a dollar bill up on the witness stand there with the one of the expert witnesses from the IRS, and he says, what is that? The guy said, well, it's a dollar. He said, are you sure? He said, yeah. So he lays a silver dollar up there, and he says, what's that? He said, what's a silver dollar? He said, so both of these are a dollar. He said, yeah. He said, well, that can't possibly be right. One of them must be lying. And we went through the machination. The fact of the matter is, if you go into the law, all of your tax tables, everything you'll see is based on a denomination in dollars.
Yep.
And a dollar is not a thing. Okay? A dollar is not an object. It is a measurement.
Mm-hmm.
Like an ounce, a pound, a gallon, an inch.
It's weights and measures, right.
Exactly. It is not and cannot by law be anything but a measurement. So when you have a strip of paper that makes a claim to be equivalent to that measurement and you find that it is not equivalent to the legal measurement,
right?
Why would you then give your sworn testimony saying something other than that?
It's amazing. Wow.
Wow.
Think
well,
about
Ron, you and I are fun. We got to talk about this carrot bar thing because I pulled it up, but I see the MasterCard, but do you use it? Do you have it? Do you?
No, I do not, but I know it exists, and I've got a good friend of mine that uses it, and, you know, that's all he does. He will not. Now, again, I've had my battle with the IRS and continue to have that battle, and, you know, they're not going to allow me to come into a courtroom or any other kind of gathering or meeting and make any kind of viable argument. They're just simply going to exercise their ability, not authority, but their ability mm-hmm. to take from me what belongs
right.
to the bank.
So how does that connect to carrot bars and you not using it, or does it?
I found out about carrot bars far too late, but carrot okay. bars is a way for you to make that conversion. And I will say that I have not read the entire code section, but I know I have. I've read previously in the Federal Reserve Act, Title 12, that if the government or if the bank wishes to enforce the code, I believe it's still there, but I won't swear to it, the conversion of Federal Reserve notes into gold or silver is illegal.
So one more time, Chief?
The conversion mm-hmm. of Federal Reserve notes
yes.
to gold or silver currency is illegal.
So what are you saying? This carrot bars is illegal?
Yes. By the letter of the Federal Reserve Banking Act, yes. As I said, all of that currency belongs mm-hmm. to the bank which it was issued to.
So then we're still vulnerable. I'm walking around with this card. It could be
well,
everything could be taken from me, no?
Everything can be taken from you even without the law, Mike.
Yeah, and I know, but I mean...
Well, but I mean...
Yeah,
that, they
so am I getting a bullseye on my back?
You know, probably so.
Hmm.
Well, you know, the person that I go to if I want to buy stuff, he does accept those Federal Reserve notes, and he will push some nice silver across the table if you give him the right amount. So, you know what?
Oh,
they
yeah.
can pound it.
I have never heard of anyone being prosecuted under
that
code section. But I do know it exists because I've read it with my very own mm-hmm. eyeballs on the U.S. Gov code search website.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that may have been repealed or there may have been a repealer in
mm-hmm.
the law when they passed it and made it legal once again for U.S. citizens to own and possess bullion.
Right.
There may have been a clause in there, but I would not swear to it, and I would not want to give anyone advice that said otherwise, because I certainly wouldn't want to lead anyone astray. I'm just telling you what I would argue if it ever came to that, which it won't, because they'll just simply take what I have.
When you deal with, even if I have X amount in the Federal Reserve fiat currency and 25% in silver, and I have possession of all of it, and then at some point the paper stuff turns into toilet paper, hopefully there'll be some kind of reset, because there's going to be 320 million pissed off people, and at least I do have a hedge on the 25% in silver. But
correct.
It's crazy, and that's why whenever I do get this electronic transfer of funds from the Social Security, then I just pay my bills, and if I want to, I take X, and I try to keep it as low as possible so that in case there is a huge crash and they decided to play a Cyprus on us, they're not going to get very much if you get my drift. So,
yep.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Look, I know some of the stuff that's going on, and I mean, I know you guys do. It is insane to believe that our government and all the governments around the world don't anticipate something very bad happening in the near future. Nothing else can explain their drive to militarize
the police from once.
Everything
all the prep,
to be militarized. You know, I just reading the story today in Texas, the Department of Wildlife and Natural Resources, you know, now they've got their very own SWAT team. I mean, honest to goodness.
Well, look at them, Ron. You see them all of them. So many are jacked up on steroids, the former jarheads, and all the equipment,
them,
most of them, and all the equipment that they're possessing now.
Well, that harkens back
exactly.
to that speech with Patrick Henry. Who do you think these are for?
Right.
Oh, man.
What army in this quarter of the globe are they amassing all these weapons of war for?
Damn right, you know what.
It is us. It is us.
Well, there's nobody else.
Exactly. It is us. I mean, it's just common sense.
Do you think it's going to be before 2016? Is this going to happen, or is it going to be out?
You know, Robert, I have no idea.
There's no timetable. Whenever they want to pull the cord.
Well, and a lot of the indicators are pointing at this year, 2014. But, you know, that doesn't mean it's going to happen this year.
Right.
Because, Ron, they'll just continue to QE. And
well, but here's the thing.
Just roll on.
I don't believe that they know.
Does any of this hinge on what happens in Europe first or no?
Well, I mean, there's any little thing could set this off.
Yeah.
You look at what the hell is going on between China and Japan over these frickin' little islands.
Yep.
They're getting a pissing match over there.
Look at
what's going on.
But is that real or is it show? But is that really show?
You know, I don't know.
Because isn't this really show, Ron? Because the wonderful D.C. government, you know, Obama is pushing the Pacific Rim. And could this be just China's excuse to bolster up again, you know, because they feel threatened, so they're just using Japan as a pawn, like as a redirect?
I got to tell you, there is a serious hatred between the Japanese and the Chinese.
Yeah, but there's always
there
been.
Had,
yeah, but there's
exactly,
always been.
Exactly my point. They are the Middle East of Asia.
Yeah,
okay?
but I'm saying look at the timing. The fact that Obama is building forces up on the Pacific Rim, could China just be saying they're pissed about these islands instead of directly feeling threatened by our presence.
Certainly.
That they're choosing Japan as a decoy.
And look, it could very well be that China is posturing, that our posturing with the buildup on the Pacific Rim, they're posturing back, and our posturing on the buildup could be because of the threat that they pose to our monetary system. You know?
Well, exactly.
Or it could be that China's in on the whole damn thing and they're all working together and it's a big charade. Who really knows, to be honest?
And then, of course, Japan needs something because everybody's glowing in the dark over there.
Yeah.
Fukushima. Well, they are, dude. I mean, the lamestream media refuses to discuss.
That's right.
That the radiation levels are vastly increasing on the shores of California, poisoning all the seafood.
They're doing it. It's here. The whole West Coast has got this problem because of that, and nobody's talking about it.
It's a lot bigger. Yes, but it's a lot bigger. I mean, the lamestream media isn't going to tell us up. So if it's bad here, can you just imagine at ground zero in Japan?
Oh, my gosh.
So these people need to – they need something. Well, they need something.
I feel so sorry for them.
Yeah. Well, who the hell puts the nuclear power plant on the coast when you've got tsunami threats? I mean, come on, really? Yeah, well, you know.
That's exactly who it was.
The evil ones.
Well, the Japanese allowed it, so, I mean, they got to have the finger of blame as well.
I mean, come on, honestly, how much say-so do you think they really had in all this? I mean, look at the...
But they could have put up a front.
Why do you think they... I mean, if we start looking at things... Why do you think the Japanese even have an economy? Why do they use a currency called the yen? We allowed that at the end of World War II so that the Japanese people would accept it, and it's a nationalist thing. It's nationalism they're playing on. But in fact, every stitch of Japan's economy is dictated by the U.S. and the U.S. dollar. Without the United States and the agreement after World War II, Japan has no economy. They have nothing. They have what we allow.
They were decimated. Yeah.
They have what we allow. And the same can be said for Germany, France, Italy, Spain, England, the Middle East.
Why haven't we heard from these countries, Japan, Germany? They haven't been in the news in a long time.
Well, and the thing is, the people over there have this perception of a disconnect from the dollar, from the U.S. government, because there's no way they would sit for the United States dictating and running their economy. That would never happen. They wouldn't stand for it. But you're right. We haven't heard much in the way of Europe and Asia lately, other than these machinations over these frickin' stupid islands that's been a bone of contention for 100 damned years plus, since 48, since the end of World War II, and all the nonsense that went on, with that whole thing in the Pacific and the Philippines, and it's a mess. It's a damned mess.
Well,
I want to ask Mikey a question.
Shoot.
What's the deal with Charlie Boy?
Charlie Boy?
Charlie Crist.
Who?
Charlie Crist, the guy, governor of New Jersey.
Oh, you mean Chris Christie.
You mean Chris Christie.
I mean Chris Christie.
Yeah, Charlie Crist is...
Well, everything is blowing up in his face now, and not only that, now he's going to be under investigation for misappropriation of... of the hurricane disaster.
Sandy relief funds.
Yeah, that's the one. And on top of it, apparently, he gave the contracts, a construction contract, to a bidder who bid $2 million more than the minimum because that agency agreed to do advertisements with his fat face on it. And... And the other, the one that came in lower, did not make that offer, so he gave them his fat middle finger and went with the higher-priced one. So that's also being investigated.
Yeah, his political career might be
done.
In the tank.
I'll tell you what, he's finished. So the GOP, the Grab Obama's Penis Party establishment, is going to have to find another jackwad.
Yeah.
Well,
you're going to play ball.
Have you heard the latest musings on that very, very same line?
No, sir, not yet, but here it comes. Let's go. What is it?
John Boehner.
Oh, that's just, hey, look, you know what? Gang? Unless Hillary has another stroke, and I hope she does, too bad, NSA. Welcome Hillary Clinton, the first woman president of the United States of America, because she's going to fire a landslide, because everyone's going to stay home.
Let me touch on that, because that's something that I should have. That's something that I should have covered in the show, and I just didn't. But anyway, can you not see currently the stage being set for this feminism to play out during the election cycle?
But they do that on every cycle. They had that
You know as well as I do. You had Hillary Clinton coming out saying that that we're in a regression when it comes to women's rights, and there's some, you know, it's broken. And I'm like, really? Because you guys are in charge. So what's that say about your policies? It's a failure of Democrat, leftist, progressive policy.
Radical, progressive.
Exactly,
yeah.
But they're going to spin it. They're going to spin it, and it's all setting the stage for this, woe is me, I am woman, hear me roar. I just see the stage being set for the Kabuki Theater that's going to be the 2016 election.
Yeah, but it's so easy, though, because 9 out of 10 Americans are brain dead. So
yes,
they're going to buy right into it, so it's really not that hard.
Well, here's the other part.
I'm not saying it's difficult. It's very transparent, actually.
I think the reason you haven't seen from Hildebeest is she's probably stuffed away in a fat farm, and then she's going to get her face lifted, so she'll be all set to go. And then, check this out. I had this conversation at church yesterday with my friend Ken, who was on my show a little bit back, we were talking about Common Core and California school systems and how illiterate the kids are, and he says, when you look at kids from, say, 13 all the way through even 30 or 40 years old in this country, and especially California, but even on average, probably 90% of that group could not ever read or comprehend the Constitution right here and now. And they go out eventually and vote. This is what we're up against. So.
Well, true.
Absolutely.
But on the other front, well, it only makes sense that Hillary is keeping a very low profile, because the more they keep her out of the fray, the less time she can be asked about Benghazi and all her other heinous crimes.
They're not stupid.
They'll bring her in at the last minute.
Right.
But there's going to be other deflections, and we'll have it.
Stick in the hornet's nest, stir it up, let them do all their stuff, let the shit stick that you want sticking, the idea that, you know, we got to do something about this inequality for women. It is the Hillary race card. It's the same thing as playing the damn race card, just
right,
a different way of doing it.
Right, but she's gonna stay out of the camera eye until the last minute, and in between that, we're gonna have deflection after deflection.
Because she doesn't want any fat jokes about her.
I should say that's the gender card.
It's because.
Democrats
don't want her constantly being asked about Benghazi. They don't want – see, America has no short or long-term memory. So the less that we talk about Benghazi, the less it's on the people's brains. And so, you know, it'll be at the last minute, but we're going to be redirected with something else.
Mm-hmm.
What that is, who knows? Maybe war, maybe economic collapse. Who knows?
Well, even if nothing comes of this whole Chris Christie thing, it's going to be more fresh in people's minds, because as well as I do, this investigation and all this crap is going to be ongoing for the next year or two at least.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Well, not just that, but MSNBC and CNN, they're going to run with it every night to kill this guy.
And you know what? thank God. I'm glad for it, because that SOB has no business being on the GOP ticket anywhere, and neither does Boehner, quite frankly. I mean, hell, you might as well run Lindsey Graham, okay?
Yep. Oh, you mean the same-sex senator. Yeah, the same-sex senator.
And,
yeah.
And Joe Lieberman.
Oh, God.
Oh, you mean Joe Lieberman, the Jewish sellout?
Yeah, or maybe we could get King in there.
Yeah, I know he was, because the day that he signed up, I just want to say about Lieberman, the day that he teamed up with Al Gore to be his vice president, because we know Al Gore is an anti-Semite and he's pro-Arab. Lieberman sold out his own people for a buck. He's a piece of garbage. I have not forgotten that.
I have got a great idea for the GOP. If they want to run a female against Hillary in 2016, I think that they should get behind Olympia Snow.
Ew.
Yeah, from Maine. I mean, come on.
Oh, I can't.
She'd be a shoo-in.
God.
That would be a good contest, though.
God, is there anybody else? How about Lindsay Lohan? I mean, Lady Gaga.
What about Jan Brewer? Now, she'd be a tough one.
No, she's already crucified. You know why, Ron and Erica? Because she's a sellout. Because she talked big and bad with the finger pointing, all right? Mm-hmm. Then when Obama squashed SB 1070, she did nothing about it. And now
she acquiesced to federal jurisdiction on a purely state matter.
Well, that, and on top of it, she's also signed up Arizona to be on the Obama state exchange. So she's finished. She's finished.
And, you know, I can go back to when Bush was in office and the Real ID Act came about. Anybody remember that? The Real ID Act?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
No, I don't.
Okay. Really? Well, the Real ID Act and Ron
Paul. I was drunk in the 80s, Ron. I don't remember.
It wasn't the 80s. This was in 2000s.
I thought it was the first Bush. Oh, never mind.
No. It came out in 2005, and it was supposed to be fully implemented by 2007. Mm. And Ron Paul went on a tirade about it, and it's basically a national ID card, for a lack of a better term, because that's what it is. Well, the state of Georgia was one of many that said, we'll not have any of that BS in Georgia.
Yep.
Right? Well, that was all posturing and bullcrap, okay? Yeah. Because what they were doing was just putting it off a little bit longer until folks had forgotten about it and they found another cause to take up. And now, don't you know, lo and behold, 2011 was the next deadline, but that was a little too soon. And now Georgia is fully implementing the Real ID Act.
Oh, my God.
And the new driver's licenses in Georgia have on the bottom left two letters, DD, and a 16-digit number.
Wow.
Well, I guess that's our national ID card, huh?
On the back of your license, you will have a barcode with no numbers under it. The barcode contains all your biometric ID information. Okay? Mm. Now, one of the guys from our forum inquired with the Department of Motor Vehicles, what the hell is this number on the front of my driver's license? I've never seen that before. And they said, oh, well, they're printed off-site, and so that lets us know what facility they were printed at.
Lie.
You mean to tell me you have so many off-site printing facilities that you need a frickin' 16-digit number to identify them all?
Jesus.
Okay, now, used to be, in Georgia, when you went to get your driver's license, they had the machine and everything set up right there. They snap your picture, and in 5 minutes, out comes your driver's license.
That's right.
No more. That is no more. Wow. Now it's going to some private company, allegedly, right? And it takes several weeks for you to get your license in the mail. And lo and behold, it's got this new number on it. Now, the guy called, and she told him that, and he's like, man, that doesn't pass the smell test.
That dog doesn't hunt.
Right. That's bullcrap. So he asked again, and she gave him another story. Well, then he called back and asked someone else, And he finally got an answer that actually made a little bit of sense to him. And I don't want to say that it was Department of Defense, but it was something along those lines, is what the DD stood for. And it was a federal identification number, or federal ID number, that ties back to all your biometric information that's kept in the state's database. Jeez. Which includes all of your medical records.
How special.
My God.
Yeah. Yeah, we are.
And that's not just Georgia that's doing that. It just happens that Georgia's doing it now as opposed to later, you know, or earlier, that they were supposed to do it and they declined.
Oh, boy.
And I'm sure all 50 states will do it because, you know, they're corporate owned, and well, they need the federal fiat currency because they're all imploding one by one. So, well, not all, but a lot, enough of them.
And I wish I had known, but I didn't know. I need to get my DD-214, and I should have gone when I got my license in Georgia. If you are a veteran, your driver's license is free for life.
Wow.
And one of our guys has got one. His expiration date is 2036.
How did he get that?
Because he's a veteran.
Ah. Gotcha.
So his license doesn't have that little DD and the number on the front. And he won't have to go renew until 2036. Nice. But see, I'm sitting here looking at mine right now, and forgive me, did I say 16 digits? Because this sure as hell looks like a lot more than 16.
Oh, my God.
But it does have the DD, and let's see, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 digit number.
Oh, my God.
Hmm.
Mm. You did that with having two beers in your system?
I have no beers in my system. And, you know, yes. I renewed this in 2012, by the way, boys and girls.
Oh, wow. Mm. Oh, my God.
Is when I got this special permission to do what is otherwise illegal, which is operate a... The expiration is 2017.
And that's mine too. But of course, I got to get a new one in Texas. So
does Florida have this? I guess Florida will have this too, right?
Well, they're all going to be
bastards. Time to go
underground. Real ID compliant. The original date, as I said, was 2011. But afterwards, you know, they just kind of quietly did this. It's not something that was talked about.
Yep, that's how they do it.
I wonder.
And
I can. It's always that way, Ron. When your life is being stripped, it's always on the down low.
Absolutely, and I mean, I can assure you that my driver's license number is a wholly different number than the 18-digit number that's under this DD.
Yeah. Bastard.
Mm. That's why, Ron. They'll get that veteran anyway. If he's a private gun owner, they'll get him. They'll get him.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So he can have his 20-30 deal. I mean, that's great, but that doesn't mean anything. They'll get him.
And remember, okay, that I pointed out that back in 2005, Bush pushed a gun bill that was either passed in 2005 or 2007, I don't remember which, that the NRA was fully behind, that was only a paragraph long, and what it did was really referred back to the 96 gun ban under Clinton, and it authorized access to your medical records by law enforcement.
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh, my gosh.
And everybody said, "Ah, what's the big deal? Hell, that's not a big deal. That's nothing. That's Yeah. Keep telling yourself that.
Exactly. Oh,
so now you have on your driver's license an 18-digit number that ties you into the state database for all your medical records and all your biometric information. And if you don't think that that is directly compiled into a federal database, you are smoking some really good stuff. You need to get out of Colorado and get back to reality.
Yep. Well, it's been a great show.
So not just that. So for you people, you know, that have toys of metal or aspire to, don't go see a shrink. Don't
right.
go see a shrink because you're going to lose it.
You know, anytime you go see a shrink, Mike, you know what they're going to diagnose you as having?
Some kind of mental disorder.
Well, not and that includes, folks, marriage counselors. Don't do it.
What they'll Robert, I can give you the answer. They're going to diagnose you with a condition that requires some kind of medication.
No, they're going to diagnose you as having an adjustment disorder. That's what it is. If you were
and do they prescribe medication to help alleviate
that?
Yeah,
they want problem? You to take they want you to take Xanax, they want
Prozac,
to,
and all those goodies. A little happy pill.
You know, I quit taking that crap. I quit taking all that.
I've never taken it. I'll be damned if I'm going to start.
Don't ever take it.
You know,
if you knew my first wife, guys, you'll understand why I was on 5 medications. And a year and a half after I left that piece of crap, I was medicine free. So there you
I'm
go.
I'm thinking if nothing, a couple, two or three rounds won't cure. You know.
Well, you know, but then,
Michael,
but then you know what? So, but then you have to walk around with clenched buttocks and whatnot. So
how's my?
Oh, no, I was talking about cocktail rounds, not.
Oh,
but that
I'm sorry.
Too. That could also work.
Yeah. Yeah.
Michael Magic.
Look, you'll lose your stuff. Oh, Michael Magic, Ron, Linda, any updates?
You know, I have not heard any more about Michael, but I do know that from what his friend said in the chat room that he is recovering. He's going to be okay.
Right.
It's just going to take a while, and of course, because of his extenuating circumstances, probably a little longer than most.
What happened to Michael?
He was in an auto accident.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
And so we're praying for him. And also, I did send an email. I don't know if his wife's going in and checking them out. I also have his phone number, so I'm going to wait a couple days. And then he's still in the hospital.
Tell him I've been thinking about him.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Well,
you still
got to
get a hold of Frank for us, by gosh.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to call his rehab counselor again and make him help me. You know?
Absolutely.
So I know he's okay and he's doing well. That's all I know.
Good.
Guys,
all right,
thank everybody for calling in.
You're very welcome. But, Ron, how late are you going to be up tonight?
I have no idea. I'm getting ready to cut off of here and just chill and have a cup of coffee.
All right, so I got to get in your ear. I mean, I'm starving. I got to eat dinner. I got to make a phone call. but I want to talk to you about this Carrot prepaid MasterCard deal. I got some questions for you. It's not a rush. If you're not going to be around.
No reason. Honestly, Mike, I honestly don't know any more than I've told you about it. I don't know. I know I've got a buddy of mine that's constantly sending me emails, and I'm like, whatever. Well,
maybe you can lead me to him then. Oh, guys, don't forget tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern time, a mini hot seat, 1 hour.
Absolutely.
And then hoot and holler. You guys, God bless.
And tell Yola I love her too.
We'll do it, Robert.
Okay.
All right. Thank
bye-bye.
You very
God
much,
bless,
guys. Thanks, Ron. Great show. Talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, yep. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.